On va prendre la page Zion et Nirvamus au Siudres. We were learning in the Perek, it talks about the dinim of whom a Kohen Gadol can and can't marry. And we know that a Kohen Gadol says has to marry a Besula. So in that connection, it talks about the question, can he, he has to marry a Besula, which is a physical characteristic. What about, can she, does she, what age can she be?
Okay, thank you.
So the Gemara says, so the Gemara mentions in this connection that she has to be a Naira. We know the usual, do you have the definition of a Naira is a girl who's developed Shteisiris and is within 6 months of that. At the bottom of the page.
Thank you.
So the Gemara says, Tanya, ain't Besula el Naira. The word Besula in the Pasuk means only a Naira. So in other words, a Kohen Gadol, when we say he has to marry a Besula, means it can't be a Ketana and it can't be a Begeres either. The Gemara describes she can't be more than 6 months past having developed Shteisiris. As we find that Rivka is described when Eliezer meets up with her, the Naira was very good looking and she was a Besula. So we see, in other words, that according to that, she was a Naira, which would mean that she was somewhere between 12 and 12 and a half. Now, there is quite a bit of discussion about that. The HaKosef points out, you know, normally when he brings in something from a Gadda, he's not just stam randomly bringing things in. There's something that teaches us something of basics of it. He has things that talk about that teach us about the greatness of Hashem, about of the Jewish people, of the Torah, etc. Here he's saying, we see from this how old Rivka was when she was married. Now, there is quite a bit of discussion about that because famously we know, we're all familiar with the Medrash that Rashi brings, that Rivka was 3 when she was married, and that's nowhere near the age of a Naira. So there is actually an explanation from the Maharam Shik related to Or Gemara, who says that in the earlier generations, it didn't depend on their age, on their birth certificate, it depended on their mental age. So therefore, Rivka, we see in the story over there, was perfectly capable of acting like a mature adult. We see how she behaved over there. So therefore, even if it was actually only 3 years since she was born, she could be considered a Naira in the time, at least before Matan Torah, in those early generations. Conceivably, that might also work yesterday with what we learned yesterday about Benois Midian. He was saying that all the ones above 3 were slated to be killed because Hein Hena Hoyu, they were all involved in the Znus with Bnei Yisrael. You have to ask a girl 4 or 5 years old, is she capable of B'chlam knowing what all that's about? But again, the answer would be that in those times, maybe yes. So there is that explanation. With that said, though, Tosfos explains that there may be different Midrashim that don't necessarily agree with each other. First of all, we have Or Gemara, but we also have a Medrash that implies that Rivka was 14 when she married Yitzchak. Tosfos brings from a medrash that says that you find 3 pairs of people that it mentions in the Torah who both live to the same age. For example, Levi and Kohath both live to 137. So another example, sorry, Levi and Amram. So another example is Kohath and Rivka. It says both live to 133. If you make the calculation, it comes out. If you make a calculation of when Rivka passed away, we know that she passed away before Yaakov made it back from Lavan's house. If you make the calculation, it comes out that she would have been 14 when she got married and not 3 like Rashi brings from the Medrash. So therefore, Tosfos says it may well be that there are Medrashim disagreeing with each other. And that Ramban agrees for that. And that Ramban also adds, for that matter, that may also still agree with Or Gemara that calls her a Naira, because again, even though usually we usually think of a girl, a katana until 12, then a Naira for 6 months after that, and a begeris after that, really it doesn't just depend on age 12, it depends when she develops Shteisiris. If she matures a little bit later, if she develops Shteisiris first at 14, then that's when she becomes a Naira and a begeris and so forth, so it still could work out.
Even according to the day that she was 14, it was 20 years before she had a child.
Everybody agrees it was 20 years before she had a child. Because it says so in the passage. According to the opinion that she was 3, Rashi mentions that they didn't even bother asking, they didn't even bother davening until she was 13, because she couldn't have a child before that time anyway. And then they waited 10 years, and then they started. Then they started davening. But according to the opinion that she was 14, then none of that would apply. And then wouldn't say specifically why they waited 20 years. But yeah,
34.
In any case, so the bottom line is there are different opinions on that subject of just how old Rivka was when she met up with Eliezer and when she married Yitzchak. But in our Gemara, it's taking as a given that she was old enough to be considered a Naira, which again is relevant as far as the halachas of whom a Kohen Gadol can marry. In fact, there's an explanation along those lines that Yitzchak himself is sort of on the level of a Kohen Gadol, having been an Ola Tmima, and therefore he has to follow the rules of who a Kohen Gadol can marry. Okay, onward. Further on, having talked about who a Kohen Gadol can marry, and in that connection, Bechlal, it discusses that a man is supposed to marry a woman who should be able to have children because he has to fulfill the mitzvah of pruvu. So therefore, so that leads into a long discussion about pruvu. The Gemara says, "Omer of Nachman, Omer Shmuel, Afpi sheyesh lo l'adam kama banim." Now, technically, the Mishnah says once a man has been mekayim pruvu, which we're going to discuss further on, how many children he needs to have and what the details are to be mekayim that. Technically, he could marry a woman who's too old to have children, or an ilonis who's physically incapable, etc. But he should be married at any rate. So the Gemara says, "Omer of," and the Gemara is saying, not only that, "Omer of Nachman, Omer Shmuel, Afpi sheyesh lo l'adam kama banim," even if a person already has many children, also lamed bla isha, it's still also for him to remain without a wife. Shenema, as we say by Adam, it's not good for man to be alone. So just the fact that he's not married itself is not the right thing. So fine, he's going to marry a woman who who's incapable of having children. Fine, but at least he should be married. The Marsha brings later on the Gemara also brings this idea that a man who is living without a wife is living without Toiva. The idea is, what does it mean? Marsha says, whenever we have anything in Maisa Bereshis where it says Toiv, Vayara Lakim Ki Toiv, Ki Toiv Ma'od, etc., always means that where it's something that's going to last, it's something that's going to continue to exist. Well, Adam by himself can't have children, therefore Loi Toiv Hayosa Adam Levado, because there's not going to be a Kiyum. He's going to live out his life and then he's going to die. Therefore, there has to be a chava, there has to be a bas zug, and that way he had net, then we can say toiv. So therefore, so that's what we're saying, that until then it's loy toiv. Okay. Now, so the Mishnah talks about how many children does a person need to have in order to have fulfilled the mitzvah of pruvu, where again, then at that point, in principle, he could marry a woman who's incapable of having children. So you have machlokas bishama bishilo. In the Mishnah, bishama says, if he has that, he has to have two boys, and that's the minimum. And Basilo holds one boy and one girl. So now the Gemara starts discussing. Where do Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel get their opinions from, respectively? In particular, it mentions that Beis Shammai gets it from, we see Moshe Rabbeinu. He had two sons with Sipporah, Gershom and Eliezer, and we don't find that he had. And afterwards, he separated from Sipporah, and they didn't have any more children. Mashma, therefore, that a person can be yotze the mitzvah pruvu with just two boys.
The opinion is, it says they have to have two boys and two.
That's going to be, the Gemara is going to bring further on, Reb Nosson's version of Beis Shammai. The Gemara is going to bring that further on. Yeah. Anyway, so Beis Shammai says, so you see from that, two boys is enough. So Beis Hillel counters that no, that was a special case that Moshe separated from Sipporah for a unique reason that applied only to him. You can't learn from that to everybody else. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Shlosh Dvarim Asa Moshe Midaito. There were three things that Moshe did out on his own, that he himself came up with the idea. V'skima Daito L'das HaMakim, and in each one of them, what he thought of agreed with what Hashem wanted, meaning that Hashem ratified and said that what Moshe did was correct, and so to speak, went along with it. The first one, the three are Pirush Mina Isha. He separated from his wife, the Shibir HaLuchas, he broke the Luchas, the Hosef Yom Echad, and he added an extra day before Matan Torah. That third one, not everybody agrees to. It's a whole Machlokas in Masechta Shabbos, a Sugya that extends over a couple of blocks, a Machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, whether in fact he added an extra day. You have one pasuk that says, "Hey, you nechonim layoyim ashlishi." Another pasuk says, "Hey, you nechonim l'shloishas yamim." And the Gemara has a whole discussion over there about whether it means that there were 2 days of preparation for Matan Torah, and then Matan Torah was on the third day, or whether there were 3 days of preparation and Matan Torah was on the fourth day. And according to that second opinion, then it was that Moshe added the extra day on his own. The Gemara has a whole sugya over there that has to do with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. Okay. So let's go through them. Pirush mina isha mai darash. What did Moshe darshan to say that he should separate from his wife permanently? Omar, so he thought to himself, Umma Yisrael shall the dibri imam shchina el lafishah. Madach, the Jewish people, where Hashem spoke to them only as a one-time thing, the kovel lahem zman, and Hashem set up, there's going to be a specific time I'm going to be speaking with you and giving you the Torah. So you could argue, in other words, they could know in advance that that it's going to be. They can be careful to not have. They can be careful to not have relations on that day or something. Omra Torah al tigshu alisha, and still Hashem told them, don't approach your wives for the couple of days before Matan Torah. And Nishim Yuchad l'dibur b'chol shah v'shah. So I am separated out that Hashem can speak to me at any time. The loy kovel izman, and Hashem did not establish a specific time. Alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that I should constantly be in a state of tara, and therefore I can't be married, because then it might happen that I'm going to be tomei. I might be a balkeri when Hashem speaks to me. The scheme of Daita, the Dasa Mokim, and in fact, what he thought of, Hashem approved of, Shenema, as we find by the Aseret HaDibros, in Parshas Vayeshanan, when Moshe repeats them, Moshe tells over how Hashem told him, Lech mor lahem, shuvu lachem la'alechem, go tell the Jewish people, return to your tents, which means not just return to your tents, as in go back and then sit in your tents and eat and sleep and whatever, it also, your tent means your wife. And by the way, the Gemara mentions in Beitza that from here we have the concept davar shebe minyan sorach minyan acher lahatira. When you have something that was asked by Beistin, you need a Beistin to be matir again, even if the reason no longer applies. Here Hashem is telling them before Matan Torah al tigshu al isha. So if it weren't for Hashem saying leicha molahem shuvu lachem alechem, then it would mean they would be also forever in period verivia. Now, by saying shuvu lachem la'alechem, then Hashem is being matter to them to resume normal family life. But Hashem continues to Moshe, va'ata poi amodi modi. But you stand here with me, meaning that Hashem is saying, you are not going to be like them. You don't return to your wife. You remain with me and always available for Hashem to speak to you. Now, Tosfos here and in Shabbos also, where you have this whole sugya, discusses it's not an ironclad kavachomer, because if it was, then you couldn't say that Moshe came up with it on his own and Hashem approved of it, because after all, the whole a kavachomer is something, by definition, a kavachomer is something that a person can come up with on his own, and then when we learn something with a kavachomer, it's part and parcel of Torah itself. There's many, many, many basic halachas that we learn from Kal Vachomers like that, and we don't consider them dirabbanans or anything like that. But here, so Tosfos points out that after all, this Kal Vachomer is not quite so ironclad. Fakert, because it's a one-time thing, and they don't know to be careful, therefore Hashem has to tell them that they have to temporarily separate from their wives. But as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu, you could argue, maybe they, or actually, no, that's not what Tosfos says. Rather, what Tosfos says is fakert. With the Jewish people, fine. Hashem is telling them for the next 3 days, you and your wives are off limits to each other, fine, but that doesn't mean they're never going to be able to do pruvu again. Hashem is going to be matir it, as he did by saying shuvu lachem la'alechem, and everything will be good again. As opposed to Moshe, if we take this kavachoyim, it means he's never going to be able to do pruvu again. He's never going to be able to be with his wife again. So therefore, so it wouldn't have been an absolutely ironclad kavachoyim. Nevertheless, Hashem accepted it. Ironclad means like solid, like that can't be schlugged up. Tosfos also points out also that you have to ask that also helps explain a couple of things. We find that Miriam and Aaron thought badly of Moshe for this, and they thought Moshe is not a Navi any different than the rest of us. Why did he separate from his wife? And Bechlal, when did they first find out about this? Is about a year later, about almost a year after Matan Torah, with the whole thing when the 70 Skenim were appointed. So what's going on? So Tosfos says, first of all, that he was separated permanently. They didn't know actually until Tzipora told them. But what happened was they realized that Hashem had told Moshe v'atapoya modi modi. It says so in the Torah. But they thought that Moshe shouldn't have come up with the idea on his own. They said, fine, once you came up with the idea, then the Eibishter went along with it. But you shouldn't have come up with the idea in the first place. And that's why they spoke, and that's why they spoke badly about Moshe. And Hashem has to come and explain to them that it's true, Moshe is on a completely different level of nevuah than you. And that's why, and that's why it's different for him.
Why did he come up with that separation idea in the first place? Why?
So we're saying that all the Jewish people had to separate from their wives before Matan Torah. But Moshe made a kavachomer to realize that I am constantly on call. Hashem can speak to me at any time, so that I always have to be tohar. And if I'm going to be able to be with my wife, it might happen that I'm a balkeri. In fact, in connection in that story with Miriam and Aaron and Moshe at the end of Parashas Bahaloscha, Rashi brings over there from Sifri, I think, that when Hashem calls all of a sudden to all three of them to go to Ohel Moed, then all of a sudden Aaron and Miriam are screaming, Mayim, Mayim, we need water, we need to get to a mikveh quickly because we didn't know that Eibishter is going to speak to us all of a sudden, and we didn't prepare ourselves. So that's why Hashem explains to them, see, that's exactly why Moshe had to do what he did.
Yeah, They were not pure.
They weren't pure because they had had relations with their spouses, respectively. Yeah.
Question: When the Tzipori said oil in the Shoshem Shalem, was that a taina? Did they need her approval?
No, it's not a matter of approval. Tzipora saw what's going on. We have 70 skenim that are getting nevuah, and she's saying, you know what? It's not an unalloyed good to be a navi because then a pity on their wives. She's saying, look what happened with me and Moshe. So yeah, okay, onward. So next, Shibirath Aluchas, my Dorash. What was Moshe's drosha to break the Luchas? Omar, he thinks to himself like this. Uma Pesach, Shu Echad Meshesh Meir, Shu Shlosh Esther Mitzvahs. Madach eating the Korban Pesach, which is only one out of 613 mitzvahs. Omra Torah called Ben Necher Lo Yecha Boy. The Torah says that a Ben Necher is not allowed to eat from it. Now, usually we would think that a Ben Necher means a Goy, but in fact, La Halacha, Ben Necher means a Yid who's estranged from Hashem. Necher, he's made himself a stranger to Hashem by worshipping Avodah Zarah. Such a yid is not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. So our Torah Kula, the Yisro Mumrim, here we have the entire Torah, and the Jewish people are Mishumodim, Rahman al Tzlan, because they've worshipped the eagle, Alachas Kama Vakama, how much more so that they can't receive the Torah. The Eskima Daita, the Das Amokim, and sure enough, his Das, that Hashem agreed with that, Shedichtiv Asher Shibarta, as Hashem refers to him, Hashem mentions him, the Luchas that you broke, the Omer Shlokish, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Yishar Koichich HaShibarta. The word Asher is related to the word Yishar, your strength be increased that you broke the Luchas, meaning that Hashem is approving of what he did. Now, the Rashba points out, I mean, there's tons of times it says Asher in the Torah. We don't usually darshan it as Yishar, but here, there's a couple of things. First of all, there's the fact that Hashem is mentioning it without any disapproval. There's no hint of disapproval. If Hashem disapproved of it, you would have expected him to say something like Asher Shibarta, but you know, you shouldn't have really done that, or something to that effect. The fact that Hashem doesn't say that implies that he approved of it. Second of all, also, you have the fact that the broken luchas were placed in the Orin. If it had been wrong for Moshe to do that, they wouldn't have been placed there, because then ain't kateger nasa saneger. We would say it wouldn't be, how could you have an accusation, something that would constantly be on display to show that Moshe did something wrong and is going to be placed in the Orin. So that itself shows that Hashem approved of it. There's medroshim that explain that Moshe had other points in mind as well. It was like he wanted to save the Jewish people. Al-Derech, there's the moshel Rashi brings about a queen who was Mizana, and her friend rips up the ksuba to make it look like she wasn't married yet. So there was that in order to mitigate the crime that the Jewish people have done. Marsha brings over here from the Sefer Paneach Rosa that asks, you know, by the Korban Pesach, you find that if you shecht it, now like this, for example, the Korban Pesach also can't be eaten by an oral, by a person who doesn't have a bris milah. Yet the halacha is that when you shecht the Korban Pesach, you're supposed to have in mind the people who are going to be eating it. But suppose you shecht the Korban Pesach and you have in mind some people who have a bris milah and are allowed to eat from it, as well as you have in mind some people who are arelim and kanah. Nevertheless, the Pesach is kosher because at least you had in mind people who are able to eat from it. This is, by the way, a fascinating and deep explanation from Ablevik, from the Rebbe's father, about why that is b'pnimis yanim, about the shechting of the Korban Pesach represents chokhmah, and the eating of it represents bina, and he goes into a whole arichos about what that represents in terms of the yinika, in terms of the ability of forces of klippus to be able to get their nurturing from kedusha, et cetera, he goes on for it with pages and pages. Anyway, so here also, so you could say, look, Shevet Levi didn't worship the Avodah Zarah, neither did the women. Now, not all the Jewish people were involved in the Chet Ha'egel, so why can't Moshe say that, you know what, for the sake of the ones who didn't worship it, I'll bring down the Torah for them? So the Paneach Rosa himself gives an answer. Marsha brings the difference is here we're talking about they worshipped Avodah Zarah. That's a lot worse than not being Gemalot. Second of all, Marsha himself says, you know what? Even we say, for example, a goy can learn Torah. That would be, in other words, what kind of Torah can he learn? Sheva mitzvahs, not the rest of the Torah. So the same way Moshe is saying, if the Jewish people have made themselves like goyim, they can't be given the Torah as a whole. Then, by the way, Marshall also brings up the point, which a lot of Mephoshim before him bring up the point. Now, like this, Hashem had already told Moshe that Kishiches Amcha, your people have acted destructively, they've made an egel. And yet Moshe not only brings down the Luchas, we learned previously in the Yerushalmi and Shkalim that Moshe, so to speak, wrested them out of Hashem's hands. We talked over there about you had two Tfachim of the Luchas are in Moshe's hands and two in Hashem's hands, and two is not being held by either one. And Moshe Va'espos had grabbed the hold of the Luchas, I yanked them out of Hashem's hands and brought them down. Why is he bringing them down anyway? Does he not believe Hashem? Does he not believe Hashem? What's going on down there? So Maharsha himself, so Maharsha first of all brings an answer from the Medrash. We learn from this a precedent. It wasn't so much that, of course, Moshe believed Hashem, but we learn from this a precedent. Never do things based on one aid, no matter how trustworthy somebody is. And of course, Hashem, you can trust everything he says. Nevertheless, if you need to aid him, or you have to see it yourself. Then he brings from the Sefer HaIkrim that says that it's not that, it's more that that Moshe became more of, as much as you might believe something that you hear, it has much more of a powerful effect on you when you actually see it. So Moshe, as much as, of course, he believed implicitly everything Hashem is telling him, but still, when he actually saw it with his own two eyes, then it had a much greater effect on him, to the extent that he figured at that point, we have no choice but to break the Luchas. And then the Abarbanel brings a point that actually Moshe did it because he wanted to make a public spectacle of it in front of the Jewish people. He davka wanted to bring down the Luchas and then let it be seen in front of them, in Nechem, he says in Parshas Ekev, when he describes the scene, in front of your eyes, I broke the Luchas, because he wanted to shock them out of what they're doing. So in any case, these are all various reasons why he brought down the Luchas for them. But here in our Gemara, we're saying that that it wasn't just out of anger or upset or whatever. It was based on a rational Kal Vachomer about the fact that the Jewish people can't be getting the Luchas, can't be getting the Torah when they're in the state of Avodah Zarah. Now again, it's not an absolute Kal Vachomer that couldn't be schlugged up. Again, otherwise we couldn't call it Daita alone. So we mean, in other words, again, there are ways to schlug it up. For example, what the Paneach Raza points out, that after all, we say that you can shech the Korban Pesach on behalf of those who are, as long as you have in mind some of the good ones. In the same way over here, there were some good people among the Jewish people. But nevertheless, it was a Kal Vachomer, and Hashem accepted it and praised Moshe for doing it.
When you say the aid is for one person, it's Lashon Hara, because you can't do it.
Sometimes it can be Lashon Hara. I mean, we have cases in Halacha where you can accept aid, but in general, you need two aid. You need two aidim where you have to see it yourself. Even for example, Kiddush HaChodesh, you might have, one person, the most trustworthy person, comes to Beis Din and says that I saw the moon. We still can't be Mekadosh LaChodesh based on that. We have to have two aidim, or the Beis Din has to see it themselves. The third one, Hosef Yom Echad Midaita Maidorash. What did Moshe darshan to add one day before Matan Torah? So Hashem had said to him, V'kidashtam Hayom Umachar. Hashem says, make them holy today and tomorrow. Now, that Hashem said to him on Gimel Sivan. On Dalad Sivan. So Hashem is telling them, make them holy today, Dalad Sivan, and tomorrow, Hay Sivan. And then on the third day, Vav Sivan, then I'm going to give the Torah. So Moshe figured, Hayoim Kemacher. When we're saying Hayoim Umacher, it means we're making a hekesh between today and tomorrow. Ma Mocher Leila Imay. Now tomorrow, Hey Sivan, we're including the night as well. Meaning, in other words, the second day of preparation is the night going into Hey Sivan and the daytime of Hey Sivan. So the same way, Af Hayoim Leila Imay. Today should also be together with its night. Now, the Lila in Anophicle. Now, by the time Hashem told it to him, it was already the daytime on Dalad Sivan. The night going into Dalad Sivan had already passed. Therefore, Moshe realizes what Hashem is implying is we need two full days with the nights before them. So therefore, we have to add one extra day. We have to add Vav Sivan so that the night before it and the day before it, there you have two full days that can be called Hayoim Amachar. Shmamina, so Moshe figures to himself. Therefore, we see today Yom Levamei Ha'idne. It must mean 2 days besides for today. The schema died to the Dasamokim, and Hashem agreed with him. That in fact the Shechina rested on Har Sinai, and Hashem gave the Torah only on Shabbos morning, where the original plan, according to Rabbi Yossi, anyway, would have been that it would have been given Friday morning. According to Rabbi Yossi, it was given on Shabbos, Zayin Sivan. The Gemara discusses over there, everybody agrees that the Torah was given on Shabbos. The Machloikas is whether it was Vav or Zayin Sivan, and in turn that depends on this Machloikas, whether Moshe added another day or not. Now again, you do have the point. For example, that I think Chassam Sofer makes this point. One way of looking at it is the Gemara discusses over there in detail why it is that you needed these 3 days anyway. Why is it not enough? For example, you just have most tumas a person has. He just has to go to the mikveh. He has head of shemesh. He waits till seisa kachavim, and that's that. So why do you need 2 or 3 days of preparation? And the Gemara discusses over there. You have the whole concept of preletus shichvas zera. If a couple has had relations and shichvas zera leaks out of the woman for up to a certain amount of time after the bia, then it's metameh her. And the Gemara discusses in some detail over there how long after the bia that would be metameh.
Yeah, 3 days or something.
So that's the thing. The Gemara brings different opinions over there, whether it's four onus, five onus, six onus, where an onus is 12 hours. So we're talking about 2 full days, 48 hours, or 2.5 days, or 3 days, whatever. The Gemara brings different opinions on the subject. The point is, there's an explanation, I think, from Chassam Sofer. Hashem would know that there's not going to be anyone who's going to be poilet after that time. Therefore, Hashem is able to say that there should be 2 days, which is to say a day and a half of preparation for Matan Torah, and that's good enough. Moshe, who's a boss of Adam and can't possibly know that, he had to add an extra day just to be on the safe side. And again, Hashem approved of that and gave the Torah on that day. There was an interesting explanation from, you have one of the major, the each section of Shulchan Aruch has 2 major noisekelim on, and then you have of course a lot of other mefarshim as well. On Orach Chaim you have the Taz and the Magen Avraham. On Yeridei you have the Taz and the Shach. On Evin Ezer, the two major noisekelim are called Chelkas Mechokek and Beis Shmuel. So the Beis Shmuel has an introduction to Evin Ezer, and in it he mentions this Gemara over here, and he gives a nice twist on it. He says all 3 of these things that Moshe did, all 3 of these kavachomers that he came up with, all have to do with the idea of considering the kedusha of the Torah to be on a higher level than on such a high level that we have to treat receiving the Torah as though it was truma or kodshim or something. So that explains why we have to add the extra day to be absolutely sure of not having the problem of pelatas shichvas zera. That's why Moshe himself has to be constantly separated from his wife again, because in other words, we could say with kodshim, it's not necessarily enough to just have to toivel and do hair of shemesh. You need also a higher level of kedusha for that. And for the same reason, he could consider the Torah to be like the Korban Pesach and break the luchas based on the logic the Gemara says over here of comparing it to the Korban Pesach. So all 3 of them kind of go together as considering the Torah, receiving the Torah, and learning the Torah as being on the level of a Korban. Anyway, the point is that Beis Hillel is saying, so the fact that Moshe ended up having only 2 sons, that doesn't show that everybody else can be Yotze Piriyah V'Rivyah with 2 sons. It shows that Moshe and had a special situation because of which he separated from Tzipora. That doesn't show that everybody else would be in the same way. Now, the Gemara brings Tanya, Rab Nosson Omer, Beis Shamar Omer, Beis Chorim, Beis Nekevis. But Rab Nosson has a different version of the Machloikas. According to him, Beis Shamar says you need 2 boys and 2 girls to be Yotz of the Mitzvah, Puri Viribia, or Beis Hillel Omer, Zachor, and Nekevan. Beis Hillel says it's enough to have 1 of each. So Omer of Honam, my time, and Rab Nosson, I'll liberate Beis Shamar. Why does Rab Nosson learn Beis Shamar like that? Dichtiv, because we find by Odom and Chava, that Tosef the letters S Ochiv S Hovel. The pasuk says that Chava gave birth to S Ochiv, to S his brother, Cain's brother, S Hovel. So the S's, the extra S's, teach us Hevel va'achoyse, Cain va'achoyse. It teaches us that both Hevel and Cain were born with twins. To be exact, actually, Marashah says, Es Ochiv doesn't suggest a twin of Cain. In fact, the Medrash actually learns differently, that since it says the 2 S's by Hevel, it means that Hevel was born together with 2 twin sisters. So they were triplets, actually. But so actually what it is, it's really more, we learn from the fact that it says that she gave birth to S Cain. Vatar Vatelet S Cain. So that means another one together with Cain, namely a twin sister. And then when it says S Ochim, S Hovel, then it means that Hevel was also born together with a twin sister. So we see, in other words, that Adam and Chava had to have at least 2 boys and 2 girls in order to be Yotze Pruvu.
It was because it happened by them, means everybody.
So we can use that as a precedent. Yeah, they were the original ones that were given the mitzvah of Pru Uvru. So now you also have the pasuk later on that when Chava gave birth to Shase, she says, "I'm naming him Shase, because Hashem has given me another child, Tachas Hevel, instead of Hevel, Ki Haroge Koyin, because Kayin killed him." So we see, in other words, that it's not just that she had two boys and two girls to begin with. It's that they wouldn't have been Yotze if all those boys and girls hadn't ended up having children. Since Hevel died without having any children, then therefore she needs, so to speak, a substitute for him. And without that, she and Adam wouldn't have been yotze the mitzvah. Therefore, we say, says Reb Nosson, according to Beis Shammai, you see from that you need two of each. But Rabbanan, what are the other Chachamim who learn Beis Shammai differently, or Beis Hillel? They say, that doesn't prove anything. Oh, do you who to komodi? Chava is giving expressing her gratitude. She's thanking Hashem that she did that, that we're not just left with one boy, that Hashem gave me another boy to help make up for Hevel. Doesn't mean that without that, I wouldn't have been yotze the mitzvah. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that Cain and Hevel married those respective sisters, and that's how the whole world is built from that. It actually mentions it on the Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim when it says that a brother and sister are having relations. Chesed who? Cain married his sister. Ha'itochen. The answer is that was a special chesed that Hashem did in order for the world to be able to be established. But after that, it's also.
So Cain and Hevel both married?
No, well, Hevel. So it was with Hevel, actually. I mean, he didn't have a chance to have children before he was killed. But the Medrash actually mentions, okay, the Medrash actually, which takes the view that since you have an extra S by Hevel, it means there was an extra girl born with him. The Medrash says that was part of the fight between Cain and Hevel, where Cain claimed, "I'm the Bechor, therefore out of the three girls that we have over here, or three sisters, I should be getting two of them." And Hevel said, "Yeah, but the two of them were born together with me, so they're obviously meant for me." So that was part of the fight between them. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. It's my what happens if a person had the necessary amount of children and they died? So now is a yotze pru of runa. Rav Huna amar kiyim piru v'livya. Rav Yechon amar loy kiyim. So Rav Huna says he's still been mekayim pru avu because he had the children. The fact that they died, it's an onus at this point. We're not requiring him to do anything else to have more children. If he it would be good to, as the Gemara is going to mention further on, but he's not required to. Rabbi Yechanan Amar Loy Kiyim. Rabbi Yechanan says he's not been Mekayim. Rav Huna Amar Kiyim. Now, why does Rav Huna say he was Mekayim Pru Avu? If after all, the fact is, the whole point of Pru Avu is to further the human race. And how is that accomplished if his children died without having children? Nevertheless, Rav Huna says he's Yotze Mishum de Rav Asi, because based on what Rav Asi says, because the Omer Rav Asi, Ein Ben David Baj Yichlu Kol HaNeshamas Shebeguf. Ben David, Mashiach, is not going to come until all the Neshamas have been used up in Guf. Now, what is Guf? Rashi over here, and in some other places in Shas where it brings this memra, Rashi explains that Guf is the name of the Oitzer, is the name of the chamber, Lamaila, where Neshamas are stored. So therefore, so it means until all the neshamas have been used up, have been taken out of guf and brought into bodies down here on earth, then David, then Mashiach is not going to come. So therefore, in other words, Rav Huna is saying, even the person did not, as his children didn't survive, so you could say it's not furthering the continuation of the human species and of the Jewish people. Nevertheless, it did accomplish that more neshamas have been taken out of guf, and therefore it's brought Mashiach closer. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki ruach melefana yatov, a spirit from before me is delayed. Now the word yatov, in context of the pasuk, yatov means to enwrap itself, or sometimes the word otaf, into sometimes the shodosh otaf in Tanakh means to be weak and fainting. But here the Gemara is understanding yatov meloshen delaying, like you have in the pasuk vayahatuf from the lavan, the slower animals went to lavan, and then the faster ones to Yaakov. So we see that the word yatov can mean to delay. So the spirit, meaning the spirit of Mashiach from before me, is being delayed because of neshamas ani asisi, because I've made neshamas and they haven't come down to earth yet. So therefore, Rav Huna is saying, so at least by having children, you're at least mekayim, you're at least helping to bring Mashiach closer, and therefore the fact that those children didn't survive, Rachman al-Tzlan, still means you were still mekayim now. A couple of interesting things in that regard are, first of all, why is that storehouse in Shemayim called Guf? That seems like an odd name for it. So there's a couple of different points about it. One point is because every neshama is tailored to the guf that the Eibishter is going to put it into. So therefore, the storehouse that they're located in, Lamaila, it can itself be called guf.
Yeah, the guf could be like a collection of neshamas.
A collection of neshamas, right. Anyway, Tosfos brings up a point in Masechet Nida, which is one of the places in Shas where it brings this, where it brings the statement. Tosfos says, one second, what about, for example, you have a Gemara where it says that if the Jewish people were to keep two Shabbosis properly, then Mashiach would come. And what happens if they hadn't had all the children by that time and there were still neshamas in guf? So Tosfos says, fine, if that were to happen, Hashem would make that, for example, women would start having multiple births, like you have in Mitzrayim, if they had six at a time. Marsha there points out, even that's not going to be enough. I mean, there might be a lot of neshamas. Conceivably, you could have, there could be thousands of neshamas left over there. How are you going to have that how can you have one woman or a couple of women are going to start having multiple births, and right away after they kept the two Shabbosis, Mashiach will come? So rather, Marsha says, we have the concept that one neshama can incorporate many others. In Chassidus, we call it a neshama klalis. For example, there's a medrash where Rabbi Akiva one time is talmidim are dremeling zich a little. They're tired and falling asleep. So to get them alert again, he wants to say to them something startling.
Something startling.
Something like that's gonna make a. So he tells something startling. Something surprising. Startling. No, whatever. This isn't an English class. Whatever. Something surprising. Something surprising. Shocking. Whatever. Shocking, surprising, whatever you want to call it. So he tells them there was one woman in Mitzrayim who gave birth to 600,000. What do you mean? So he explains to them that Yocheved gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu. His neshama is equal to all the 600,000 neshamas of the Jewish people. So the same way, Marsha says, well, very well, the Gemara means if the Jewish people keep two Shabbosis Kilchasan, then the Eibishter will make that the next woman who gives birth will bring down a neshama klalis that includes all the neshamas that are left in Guf. So therefore, so it works out. Okay. Yeah. With that said, though, Ion Yaakov says that maybe that might actually be why Rabbi Yochanan disagrees in this Gemara over here, because Rabbi Yochanan is the very one who says that the Jewish people have to keep two Shabbosis for Mashiach to come. So therefore, so he might disagree. He might say it's not a matter of emptying out the neshamas from guf. You need something else in order to bring Mashiach. So therefore, he would argue over here and say, by the same token, very nice, he brought down neshamas from guf. Nevertheless, you still haven't been mekayim pruvu, because they have to survive. Rabbi Yochanan says a person is not Makayim Piri Veriviya if his children died, because L'Shevis Yitzara Ba'inim, because after all, the purpose of Puru Avu is that the world should be settled, V'Holeka, and the fact is you don't have that, because those children have to have children in order for that to happen. Famously, we know, by the way, Rabbi Yochanan himself was in that situation. The Gemara mentions in a couple of places that Rabbi Yochanan had 10 children and all of them passed away in his lifetime. He used to go around, he would take a little bone and carry it around with him. Tosfos mentions that it was a tooth from one of his children, so that way it's not metame. Some Mephoshim learned that it was a little bone from the Sudas Havra, from the meal that he was served by the Levi after the Leviah of the last one of them, and he would use it to be Menachem Oval people who lost a child. He would use that to be Menachem Avol them, basically to say, you know, look, I have it worse than you. So nevertheless, though, still, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, a person in that situation, yes, it was an onus, but still he has a responsibility to do whatever he can to have more children. By Rabbi Yochanan, actually, it mentions there are some Rishonim who mention that the Ramasna, who we have in the Gemara in a number of places, it's brought, was a son of Rabbi Yochanan. So therefore, according to that, he had 10 children who passed away in his lifetime, but eventually he still kept on trying, and eventually he had a son, Ramasna. We find in the Gemara in Kedushin that Rabbi Yochanan had a daughter as well. So in the end, according to that, he actually was able to be Mekayim Puruvu.
He did have a daughter too?
The Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that Rabbi Yochanan one time is talking with one of the Chachamim who had come from Bavel. I don't remember now which one. He wanted this Amora to marry his daughter. He wanted to make a shidduch between his daughter and the Amora, and the Amora kept on turning him down, because the Gemara explains over there the Jews of Bavel have greater yichus than those of Eretz Yisrael, so therefore he figured that it would be like a downgrade to marry Rabbi Yochanan's daughter. The Gemara mentions it over there, so we see that Rabbi Yochanan had a daughter who at least reached marriageable age.
So these two children gave him
some pashtus. Then I guess we could say that he, in the end, he was Mekayim Puruvu. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara brings in this connection that there are different opinions on the subject of what descendants a person has to have to be Mekayim Puruvu. Suppose, for example, that a person had a son, and then that son passed away and left a daughter. Would that be enough for us to say that he was Mekayim Puruvu? Because he had a son and he had a daughter, and the daughter maybe would be considered like the granddaughter, that is to say, would be considered like his daughter. And the Gemara discusses that point. So the Gemara says, "Omale Rabba le Rabba le Rova Bamori Menaha Milsa de Amar Rabban and Bnei Bonim Harein Kabonim." So Rabba asks Rova Bamori. We find in a number of places in Shas that this Rova Bamori was a big expert in Tanakh, and we have many times where the other Amoraim would ask him, "Where is a source in the pasuk for such and such?" So where is a source in the pasuk for what the Chachamim say, Bnei Bonim Harein Kabonim, that in this context, grandchildren can be considered like children. Now it's not applicable in all areas of halacha. There's actually something that comes up in Daf Yomi in a couple of days where it says that for certain in Loshen Bnei Adam, it's not always like that. In Loshen Bnei Adam, people don't always use son or daughter to mean grandson or granddaughter, and that has implications for certain dinim of Yerusha. But in Torah terminology, it works. Where do we see that? Ilema medichtiv, where you're going to say because Lavan says to Yaakov, Habonis v'noisev habonim bonai, where he says, after by the whole showdown over there on Harag Gilad, where he says, the daughters, meaning Rachel and Leah and Bila and Zilpah, are my daughters, v'habonim bonai, and the sons, all the Shvatim, are my sons. Do you think I would ever harm them, etc.? So you're going to say that now they're Lavan's grandchildren. So you're going to say that shows that grandchildren can be considered children. Doesn't work. What about Lavan continues? The sheep are my sheep. What would that mean? They're descended from his sheep, but they're not actually his sheep. Ella dekonis minai, all that Lavan means is you acquired these sheep from me because I'm the one who gave you your original stock of sheep and you bred these from them. Hachanam dekonis minai, the same way. It doesn't mean that I'm considering these grandchildren to be my children. It just means that you have this whole family only thanks to me. So
that the goof has to be emptied out before the sheikh is revealed. That could be
three times a mishpacha,
but anywhere
yeah.
Maybe that's
one. Yeah. Good,
right?
I don't know. Okay. Rather, we have the following pasuk that shows it. The pasuk says, "V'achar bo chetzron or bas mocher avigilad." The name of Chetzron, who was a descendant of Shevet Yehuda, had relations with the daughter of Mochir, the father of Gilad. Mochir was a son of Manasseh. This may have been before Matan Torah, and the Rambam describes in Hilchos Ishus that before Matan Torah, kiddushin weren't necessary. A couple could just decide to have a common law marriage. So when we're saying ba, it could mean that he took her as a pilagish, whatever. Chetzron was a descendant of Yehuda, and he had relations with the daughter of Machir, who was the father of Gilad, which is to say, in other words, this girl that he had relations with, that he had a common law marriage or pilagish relationship with, whatever, was a granddaughter of Manasseh. The pasuk says she bore to him a child named Sguv. Uchtiv. Now later on, the pasuk says mini machir yodu machoikakim. From machir there have come lawgivers. People who give the law, people who teach Torah. Now the word mechoikik, uchtiv, Yehuda mechoikik, we find that the name mechoikik, the lawgiver, is applied specifically to Shevet Yehuda. So how are the mechoikikim from machir? So the answer is through his daughter, through machir's daughter, who had a child together with Chetzron from Yehuda. Therefore, we can say, and it's called mini machir from machir. So even though it's machir's grandson, nevertheless, they can be attributed to him, and it can be considered his children. So therefore, we see that a daughter's sons can be considered like his own sons. Rabbi Akiva Eger, by the way, Gilui Nashas, on this Gemara, mentions there are a number of other sources in the Torah for that concept as well, one of them being in this week's parasha, in today's Chumash, when Avraham is talking with Avimelech, and he says, well, Avimelech is saying, why'd you say that Sarah is your sister? So among them, in the whole conversation, Avraham mentions over there, as a matter of fact, Achosi bas ovihi achloi basimi. She is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not of my mother. Now, she wasn't actually his sister. She was his niece, because she was the daughter of his brother, Haran. So we see from that also, Bnei Bonim Haran Kabonim. We see that Haran's daughter, Sarah, can be considered as though she was Terach's daughter. We have a number of other psukim and Maamarei Chazal that imply this point as well. But the Gemara says here we have a very clear proof that a daughter's son can be considered in Torah like a son.
Son
as well, yeah. Okay, fine. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Yud Beis Cheshvan. People ask the question, what is the world going to say? What are the Umas Ha'olam going to say? A Yid is doing Yafutza Ma'nesecha Chutza. A Yid is trying to bring the Ge'ula Amidus Vashlema closer. They don't understand what that's all talking about. Sure, they can understand. A person might say, a Yid might say, yes, it's a very important Avoda, but don't we have to take into consideration what the world is going to say about it? So the answer is the world is already ready. A Yid does his avoda the way it's supposed to be, higher than any limitations, but he uses the kalim of teva for that. Then he demonstrates that the world and the entire nature of the world and all the nations of the world are actually helping him in that avoda. the doing of halachas of animals and pets on Shabbos, one big question that comes up with as far as animals on Shabbos is, are they muktza? Pets, are they muktza on Shabbos? Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it actually says animals are muktza on Shabbos, and they're called muktza machmas gufoy because there's no particular use like this. An animal you would have, a kosher animal, for example, you would shecht, but you can't shecht on Shabbos, and it's not a keli, so therefore it would be muktza. Now, though, so on the face of it, that would apply to pets as well. There are poskim, there is a famous thing from Maharach, from the Maharach Urzarua Rishon, who discusses, he mentions a case over there of a bird that can be used, that's singing or whatever, will help calm down a baby. That maybe then in that case, it's not muktzah, you would be allowed to give it to the baby to play with in order to calm him down. So the poskim of our times talk about, is that a precedent, for example, to say that you should be allowed to hold and handle pets, especially befrat, a pet nowadays is even more so than that bird then. The bird then might be, at least you're basically using it for food, but meanwhile, you can use it to entertain the kid. Mashenkin, nowadays, a pet's only purpose is to entertain you. So there are poskim achronim that discuss the pros and cons of it. Some of them do allow it with qualifications, and others still say no. So as far as handling, as far as picking up a pet, as far as picking up a pet on Shabbos, it's actually not so simple. It would be something to ask a shayla on if it comes to that.